Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Beyond and hello and welcome once again to IGN's weekly PlayStation show. I guess this week we're doing things a little bit different and we are coming straight out of a big, huge state of play where we got to see some pretty cool stuff from Sony. I'm your host, Max Scovel, and I'm joined by my good pals, Jada Griffin, Akeem Lawanson, and Brian Altano. Hey, everybody.
Hey, yo. Beyond.
Okay, wow. So there's quite a lot to talk about. That was a good offering of things that felt like more, you know, there was a lot of third party stuff in there, but that felt like a lot of properly Sony adjacent stuff compared to one of those last ones. There was a lot of kind of third party stuff. Definitely going to talk about Silent Hill. I want to touch on Sonic, Akeem, because you're here.
Of course.
Also, let's talk about Kojima. We just got a big, huge look at not just Death Stranding 2, but a new action espionage game, which is, I think, a polite way of saying he's doing the old Metal Gear thing again. How do we feel about this, Jada?
About doing this, it's interesting. The trailer looked really good. I'm not the huge Death Stranding person, so like I don't know. I enjoy it for what it is, but I don't know if there's gonna be enough in this Death Stranding 2 to pull me in like day one. But I'm fascinated by what they're doing and what the story is. It's so weird. It's so bizarre. From that little cat dragon ooze thing to the person playing the guitar, like it's just all over the place, like it's wild. Yeah.
By the way, that was Troy Baker playing the guitar. By the way, I think we have confirmed
Troy
that by
Baker in a Hideo Kojima game. Get out of
yes,
town.
Looking like Joker too. Like I don't know, this game looks. I understand where Jada's coming from when she refers to the first game not being her cup of tea. I mean, it was kind of like let's just admit it was like a walking simulator, but Kojima, I don't know, he just has like a great imagination. I mean, like just looking at this game, like we see Troy Baker with the guitar, he's like wielding it as a weapon, like he's Bill and or Ted. We got the little puppet guy who, you know, has like that whole Into the Spider-Verse movements that he's doing.
I believe awesome. that guy who's pulling stuff out of, that's Lea Seydoux, who's returning from the first one. But I think that's George Miller's body, but played by somebody else, the director of Mad Max. Like in the same way that, you know,
Alan Wake, how they had different voice actors.
I was gonna say like they had you know, Guillermo del Toro is body in the first one, but he was voiced by somebody else. This almost feels like a spoof of Death Stranding. Like this feels like Cracked Magazine does Death Stranding. Brian, you're cackling over there. What do you think?
Yeah, they had a sort of shot for shot remake of the stuff from the early promotional stuff from Death Stranding 1, which is the baby goes through the baby tunnel, but this time it vomits out a ship.
Well, a spaceship, yeah.
Yeah, a spaceship. And so it seems like there's going to be a lot more of that this time around. I really dig the hard sci-fi stuff they're bringing into this. I think that my thing with Death Stranding is that it didn't really get to where it needed to be until the director's cut came out, and they had like a lot of quality of life stuff and like, you know, kind of ways to like speed up the gameplay. And I appreciated all of that. And I'm hoping a lot of that makes it into, you know, the V1 version of Death Stranding 2, which is subtitled On the Beach, which is a really funny thing that sounds like a SpongeBob episode, but it's a really weird thing to have that in juxtaposition to all this crazy hard sci-fi stuff.
It's a prequel to Under the Boardwalk is what it is.
Yeah. And On the Moon.
Like, okay. So yeah, this is, I feel like, a lot to unpack. I went into the first Death Stranding like really, really excited. I was picking apart all the trailers. I was looking at like high-res photos of Norman Reedus and zooming in on his dog tags and finding like, you know, quantum mechanics, string theory, like formulas on there. Like I was on that subreddit reading all the weird theories. And then when the game came out, I feel like it fell short of that. And this time around, it feels like they're throwing way more stuff in there. And I'm gonna sort of stay a little bit less excited. Like I'm gonna sort of, you know, temper my expectations, and I feel like that could be a really good recipe for having a wonderful time. It also looks completely bonkers. Like it looks like, I don't know, Kojima either started or stopped taking antidepressants. I can't tell which. But like we've got puppets. We've got like little wet cats. We've got babies vomiting spaceships. We've got Troy Baker cooking with a backwards hat on. It's noticeably, I mean, we've got Troy Baker doing weird, you know, guitar solos and fighting robots. Like it's completely, you know, it's noticeably more colorful. It's noticeably more over the top. It's a lot going on there. And it's, mm-hmm. I don't know. That's again, the first game was announced while the studio was still being built. Like that was a big thing, is they basically announced that to kind of drum up attention to Kojima Productions as a company. And a lot of the time that spent, you know, in the oven was them like literally buying office furniture and stuff. Like I remember after that game was announced, I interviewed Kojima at PSX back, I think it was probably 2018 or something. And he was like, you have to understand, we're staffing up. Like we aren't really working on the game quite yet because we don't have people to work on it. Like that was, they were building that. And this time around, like they have a foundation to work on. They have like a staff, they know what they're doing. So I'm willing to give this one much more of the benefit of the doubt. But so what I wanted to kind of get into was with the Death Stranding, sort of a known quantity, as completely weird and out there as it is. I think that Kojima announced that he's working with Sony to make something that's a movie, but that's also a game. Not like he hasn't been doing that for 25 years already, but the sort of drone shot at the end, it pulled out and it flew over Sony Pictures Studios. And the last shot in there, I don't know if we actually caught it. There was the Universal Pictures logo. And below it, it said Pheasant, which I think is the name of the project, like Physint, like physically isn't. I don't know. That sounds like a Kojima portmanteau though. Is this getting any of you excited?
We should definitely, research that. I mean, I think I'm pretty sure the internet's already breaking things down in relationship to that. I don't know. I'm excited to see whatever this hybrid video game slash movie looks like. And you know, they mentioned action espionage. You know, I'm kind of curious when this will come out or when we'll start to see more information about this, because we do know that there's development of a remake of one of the Metal Gear Solid games. So I'm kind of curious, you know, if they're gonna be in close competition, like you know, depending upon when that game is slated to come out as well. But I don't know. I'm excited. I mean, like whatever Kojima touches turns into some weird gold. So I'm excited to see what this is.
I mean, we've had a lot of game developers attempt and movie directors attempt that sort of like weird crossover hybrid between like interactive software and, you know, cinematic plot device to varying degrees of success. Like there was that weird, I mean, Silent Hill, right? Did a thing like just a few months back where it was just like vote on cutscenes and emojis. And it was, you know, sort of a catastrophic
that's
failure.
Still ongoing, by the way. Just let you know, Silent Hill Ascension is what you're referring to. Yeah,
right. Well, they banned everyone who was watching it, so no one actually knows that it's still happening.
It was a true Silent Hill in the chat.
Yeah,
I want to touch on Silent Hill in a second, but it's worth calling out that like Kojima's got a lot of projects going right now. He's got a lot of plates spinning, or whatever the expression is. And like, so there's Death Stranding 2, which we know about. There's also Overdose, which he's working on with Jordan Peele, which has a bunch of famous people in it. That's we got that to see it over on the Xbox thing. And then there's the fact that he's also supposedly been working with he's hung out with Del Toro, with oh my god, the Drive guy, I'm drawing a blank, but also George Miller's in this. And then we've also got Jordan Vogt Roberts, who you know was apparently working on the Metal Gear movie at some point. I think he's also working on the Gundam movie. Dude likes Max,
the Death Stranding movie.
It's going to be interesting to see if like Kojima makes this like whatever this, you know, like transmedia multimedia crossover thing is, if he's like, these are all this, I'm making this movie myself, or if he farms out bits and pieces of it to make some kind of weird collaborative thing with, you know, filmmakers that he loves and respects, because that could be really cool, like a Masters of Horror type thing. Does that grab any of you, or is this just veering too far out of like the game realm?
I mean, I dig that what he's, I as a big horror nerd, I'm loving the idea of what OD can be, but I do also like wonder, like, is he spreading himself too thin, or is there too many, you know, plates spinning at the same time? That said, like seeing like there is substantial thematic and mechanical growth in Death Stranding 2. It is obvious. Mm-hmm. They are like Max, you alluded it to before, but like when they started their studio, they were basically like, hey, Horizon, can we borrow the Decima engine? And then built a whole new game that looked very, very different. It was a lot more bleaker and sadder and sort of minimalist than Horizon, which was kind of categorically busy and over the top and flora and fauna everywhere. And this time around Death Stranding 2, like there's a lot of different environments happening. There's a lot of different ideas happening. There's futuristic cities, there's deserts and all that kind of stuff. And so like, I think we are constantly positioned to seeing Kojima as this sole auteur who's single-handedly responsible for every single thing that he's involved in. But there's a large team of people working on this game, clearly. They don't get their names on the box, but like very clearly there's a lot of people working on this. So if he can sort of lay down the story beats for them and they can run and gun with this thing, and then he can move on and work on OD and Death Stranding movie and a bunch of other stuff, then, you know, I'm happy. And then we'll get a bunch of cool projects from somebody who's really interesting and smart.
I wish Kojima nothing but the best for success, but I also would love to see him kind of like take on more of like a executive producer type role and really just, you know, elevate cool ideas that come from within his team. Cause I think they did kind of like a like throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks approach when they were designing Metal Gear Solid 2. And that's why that game was so out there in terms of what it was attempting and doing. But yeah, let's shift gears here from one, a Konami alum to a still alive and well Konami franchise, which is Silent Hill, which was noticeably taciturn for quite some time. It was all quiet on the Western front up there. And then just recently we've been getting a bunch of new Silent Hill stuff. There was the weird stream along thing we talked about. And then we just got, a new Silent Hill game today. Like literally right now, they just dropped The Short Message, which we've heard rumored for quite a while. I'm sure, Akeem, you're a big Silent Hill fan. Are you okay right now? Are you annoyed that I'm like keeping you and you can't just go play this?
No, I'm not. Not at all. It's like, this is the thing. I want the remake. I'm speaking for most Silent Hill fans. We want this remake. Stop giving us Silent Hill Ascension. Stop giving us all these things that are tangentially related. Stop giving us those, what are they called, pachinko machines. Give us what we actually want. I want Silent Hill 2. That's what I want.
Yeah, no, the core of this psychological cool. horror is familiarity and like the comforting thing that we know well. No, yes. I'm teasing. But like, what's your read on this? Does this seem, compared to Ascension, does this grab you more? Compared to PT, does this look more like Silent Hill?
100%. I would say this is definitely a step in the right direction. I feel like this is what we should have gotten initially over the Ascension project that we received, which was just like a bit of a laughing stock on the internet and amongst fans. But this I think this is like a good, you know, palate cleanser coming off of that. I mean, I'm down to play this for sure. Again, just as a horror fan in general, I want to play this off rip.
I like these kind of shorter experiences that kind of give maybe new fans a chance to kind of like dive in, learn something about the story, maybe a little bit about the gameplay. It's going to be obviously be different than the core Silent Hill 2 remake gameplay loop, but kind of gets you like into the world of Silent Hill with this, which is a kind of a good, you know, for people who maybe didn't get a chance to play Silent Hill when it was big on the PS1. Era, like that's when Silent Hill was really big. PS1 and PS2. Like, there's a lot of people who maybe never played Silent Hill, unless they played like one of the remakes or collections that came out on like the PS3 era. But like,
right,
it's so like it's good to get these kinds of like new experiences. It also lets them test new things that we haven't maybe seen. Maybe this doesn't work in the full game, but it's a cool idea. It might work in a shorter experience. So I'm kind of for these smaller things.
Yeah, but I feel like one of the things that the Silent Hill franchise, I feel like I've spoken on this when we first, got that big announcement of all these games. Like, one of the things that's kind of lacking in just like the Silent Hill universe is just like, you know, these recognizable characters. Like, you look at the Resident Evil series, so many different characters that we recognize. We got the Chris Redfields, we got the Jill Valentines. There's so many. So I think the thing as like a hardcore Silent Hill fan that's just like kind of just irking me a little bit is just, these games and these experiences that we're getting, it's just in name. And of course it takes place in Silent Hill, but I want to play as some of the characters that I remember, when I picked up my PlayStation 1 and started playing it initially. Obviously not a continuation, but again, like Silent Hill 2, that's a remake. So we're revisiting this character, in the same, place that we remember. It's just, with a different coat of paint on it. So I don't know. For me, that's what I'm looking. That's what I want. That's why, give me Silent Hill 2.
as soon as we're done here, you can go and sort of whet your appetite for Silent Hill 2 by checking this out. I'm definitely wary of a Konami project that ends with like free to play. And I'm hoping that means it's more of like a PT thing where it's just like a weird encapsulated experience rather than like, I don't know how you would monetize this experience here, but like you got to pay to get the roaches off your head or whatever, like whatever they're doing. But I'm definitely curious. I'm sure people are going to be, you know, picking this apart. But let's talk Silent Hill 2, because that's the big one. That's the one that everyone loves. We got a good proper look at what this game looks like in action. There have been leaks. There was a teaser. It's Bloober Team, which, you know, they've done a bunch of horror games that have all like very clearly an homage to the Silent Hill games. I think it was the Medium had like the same composer. Like it was they've been auditioning for this. It kind of feels like how Larian was with Baldur's Gate. Like they're working their way up to tackling this classic. Akeem, as a Silent Hill 2 fan, like what did the new footage look like to you? Like, did it grab you?
Ooh, it looked so good. It looked really, really. I was like, yes, this is what I want. When they showed that, I was like, yes, can we skip all the BS that y'all have been giving us? I don't mean to call it BS. You know, I'm sorry to say that because I love Konami, but I want this. This is what we want.
For like 11 years, we got pachinko machines and Dead by Daylight yes. skins. It's okay to call it BS. It's fine.
It looks so beautiful. I mean, seeing James, obviously we just see the back of his head and his body, but like, I mean, like he's wearing that iconic jacket. Again, this is what the fans want. You know, we want to return to this place with these characters that we remember playing so long ago. And like, it's just beautiful. I like the trailer that we got many months ago. Obviously it's going to look glossy. It's going to, you know, it's cinematic. It didn't actually give us gameplay, but like looking at this, looking at the monsters that you get to fight, like some of these look kind of new. Like there was one that we just saw that looked like it was a woman. I guess she was walking on her hands and that right there, it's like her feet are in the air. I don't recall seeing that, but you know,
I think that's what you were supposed to be seeing in the original, but the graphics weren't good enough, you know?
Right. It was just
just limbs back then. That's all you could make out.
Now, Jada and Brian, you both are pretty diehard Resident Evil fans, and like the problem with this is that Capcom set a unrealistically high bar with what the recent RE remakes have been like. How do you feel about this? Do you think is it moving the needle for you, Jada?
It's not. I've never been a huge Silent Hill fan. Like they're good experiences. I enjoy them for what they are, but they've never been it's never been the franchise that's like, oh, I can't wait for the next Silent Hill. Like, when are we getting new Silent Hill games? When are we going to when can I play the remaster for this one? Like, it's never been that franchise for me. But I know it is very, very much that for a lot of people that do love that franchise. So I do hope that this one is moving the needle for them. But I don't know. It's not drawing me in as somebody who's not a huge fan of the franchise already.
I'm incredibly excited for this, but I'm as excited as somebody can be for something that still doesn't have a release date. Like the trailer ended and it said in development and we don't even have a year. And Akeem, I think you nailed it before with like sort of like this kind of machine gun scattershot approach to this franchise that went dormant for so long and then came back and was like, here's seven different projects that are not necessarily really connected in any meaningful way and not really what people are looking for specifically. Like this, you know, that free game that we're getting, it's an awesome little make good, and it's a nice kind of amuse-bouche appetizer to hold us over onto the main course over here. But like, where's the release date here? I'm happy to see more footage of this, but like, you have to keep in mind, Resident Evil 4 Remake, I feel like that was like announced and then released within a year. And then 6 months after that, we got the, you know, Separate Ways DLC. Like that was a fully feature complete package with, they added, you know, Mercenaries mode and everything. Like as a hardcore Resident Evil 4 fan, like, that I went from finding out that game was a thing to like platinuming it and beating all the DLC within like a year and a half. And so I want to, you know, I don't want to rush the game development here, but like I don't want this to be something that like we check in on this game every 6 months to a year for several more years, more state of plays and showcases. Like I just want it. I just want to play it.
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing Capcom got the hang of, was really having a good cadence for, you know, balancing like a new Resident Evil with like a remake, with a new one, with a remake. Also,
I was gonna say I should probably mention this too. This has been rumored, so it's not confirmed, but you know, they're also working on a Silent Hill 2 movie. So I know some of the rumors online that have been floating around is that, you know, they're going to try to release this around the same time as the movie. And I don't think we have a date as to when we can expect the movie in theater.
I watched the original movie just a few days ago, actually, which was like really interesting because there's a lot in that movie that is very, very early 2000s schlocky horror movie. But there's some interesting creature design and set pieces in that movie that, like, I think it's on Netflix. It's like totally watchable if you're looking for like a dumb 90 minutes to spend watching.
So the director of that is directing the new one, Return to Silent Hill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And apparently that's entirely, it's shot already, which is, like, I could see them having it in the can and holding it until they're, if they want to line it up with a video game. Like, it's right. A weird flip from how it used to be, where a video game would have to get rushed out to come out alongside the movie.
Yeah.
But I can't help but wonder if, like, if Sony's pushing this, like right now we know about more PlayStation productions, movies and shows than we do about PlayStation Studios games. And Sony obviously makes a lot of money from movies. Like, it's not like a little fledgling industry. Like, it makes sense that they would want to kind of leverage existing IP that they have into something bigger. Unclear if Sony would have anything to do with that, but, like, that's, you know, again, like on the Silent Hill front, that's if they've got it sitting around. And I mean, I could also see a Silent Hill sequel not being the biggest budget thing to make ever.
I have to imagine they're waiting to capitalize on maybe Halloween this year, because they put it on their website. This is the second time they've shown Silent Hill 2 in one of their, because we had that earlier, like, hey, 2024 PlayStation, here's a bunch of games in a video, and Silent Hill 2 was in there, and they said it was on their page for like 2024 releases. So it's a good chance. I think they're just waiting till Halloween to capitalize on that, you know, spooky time of year, to maximize sales on this one.
Well, I really hope that, like, I hope that Konami can pull it off. Konami doesn't have the best track record sometimes, and people love to get mad at them. And it would just be cool for Silent Hill fans to actually get something really up to their high expectations. Now, shifting gears, one thing that we've sort of known about for a bit is Judas, which is Ken Levine's new thing, which is not BioShock, but also it's kind of BioShock. What did we think of all this, Jada?
I'm very hyped for Judas after that trailer. Like, before now, nothing had really excited me, but this looks like the kind of BioShock style game that I've been waiting for. I've been waiting for, you know, since the first BioShock. Like, 2 was fine, Infinite was okay, but this looks like has potential to be that next, like, true successor to the original BioShock. I cannot wait for this one. The action looks good, the abilities look fun. It's very wacky and just kind of like cheeky with like how the characters are, so we'll see what that kind of looks like as we get to see more down the year or later this year, or as they show more of it. But I'm actually pretty excited about this one now.
Brian?
Yeah, I'm morbidly curious about this one. Been over a decade since Infinite came out, and Ken Levine famously left the franchise, started a new studio. Stories came out about that studio sort of having a lot of turnover and the game being kind of in development hell. And then we actually saw it in motion. It was like, oh, this is a real product now. This is a real thing. And now it's actually like really starting to come together. I think since then we've gotten a lot of BioShock-ish games. And so, like, there's, you know, I think the absence of that franchise officially has made a bunch of other smaller series and games kind of like step in its place. But like, this is coming from the creator of the original franchise. And so, like, I'm really interested to see what he does here in terms of like what it will feel like once we're actually playing it. Again, no release date, so it's tough to say as of right now, but like, I'm excited for this one. And what's awesome too is that we've heard rumors for years now about, like, at the same time, 2K is potentially either rebooting the franchise or remaking one of the old games. We don't really, really know for sure. So I don't know, like, BioShock fans could be eating pretty good in the next year or two if all these things all come together at the same time. And that rules.
Yeah, it's what I like about it is it's not like distinctly tied to one historical period, but it clearly has like a distinct art style. Mm-hmm. BioShock is all very Art Deco, and then, you know, Columbia is all like World's Fair or whatever. And this is all over the place. You got people wearing like t-shirts with Impact font on it, and you got like modern spray cans, and then there's just sort of things that look like almost like 90s toys running around. So yeah, I mean, that's something that's fun to look at. But let's see what else we got to talk about. There's also the, well, we're talking about like first person, just real messy situations to be in. There's also Metro Awakening VR, which is the Metro series getting a whole new VR component.
I'm fascinated by this. I'm glad to see that Metro is getting kind of another life, because I think it's a franchise that's like not at the top of anybody's lists or most people's lists when you think of like cool first person like kind of survival games.
It is for you.
You're a big Metro fan.
Oh hell yeah! It's what got me into FPS games.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, no, I like the Metroid series, Metro series, not Metroid. I like that as well, but that's a different podcast, different time, different conversation. I really like the Metro series, so I'm really excited for this, and this is the kind of like big experience I've been wanting for PSVR 2, so I'm really excited to see this one coming to that.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing that sort of like keeps the lights on with that fan base a little. Obviously, no secret, Sony kind of, you know, dropped the ball on PSVR 2 in terms of first party support. And I don't really get why they shipped a product that they didn't truly believe in, but it's good to see third parties will step in and be like, hey, we're working on some experiences for this thing. It's still happening. It's still going.
Yeah, no, this game looks amazing. But I how many titles, by the way, I just want to mention this because I'm kind of curious. I want to see if we know this. How many PSVR 2 titles did we see showcased today?
Two?
I think it was just two.
Two. So, okay, so out of the two, I got to be very honest with you know, the cast here, as well as the viewing and listening audience. I'm really looking forward to Legendary Tales.
I am too, actually. I'm a big D&D fan.
It looked amazing.
So.
Yes, it's you're fighting skeletons and with swords and hammers. I mean, it looked amazing. Hopefully we can pull up some of that footage of Legendary Tales.
Wait,
I mean,
it looked it's really fun to play, because like visually I did not think it looked amazing. It felt pretty dated to me.
I'll be quite honest here. It did look kind of janky, but I think that's because it was like actual footage of someone having it on their head, and so it just looked very jittery from what we're looking at now. But I don't know. I'm looking forward to fighting some skeletons.
I don't know if this was an artistic decision to kind of go with this almost kind of PS3, Nintendo Wii era, almost even like ancient PC dungeon crawler launch day edition Skyrim art direction here. But like it's decidedly kind of low poly, lo-fi. And there is a charm to that, I will say. Yeah. Like I'm not one of those people that's just like, oh, it's got to be more realistic, otherwise it's crappy. But like seeing the Metro game in VR, and then this come right after, it was just like, all right, well, we're going with something a little different here. And jank is a funny way of putting it. And I think there's a sort of an inherent jank to VR, because the animations are being controlled by you, right? Like you're waggling your arm around in the air and you're slashing and dashing and stuff like that. And it's not going to look as good as something that's like curated by an animator, because you have dumb arms. Yeah.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn, because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married, Let's Hear Them Talk About It. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show. The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Now, Brian, Max, Jada, I got to say this. Just before I lose all credibility with our audience, I was lying. I am not looking forward to this game. It looks terrible. I'm just going to say that right now. I was just joking.
Wow. Okay.
Hey, I was joking. I don't want people to assume that this is my taste.
Akeem, it's okay. It's okay. It's already out on Steam. It's been out early access since 2021. So, and it's very, people are very positive about it. So
they need to put it back in the oven.
Wait, sorry. It says mixed. But very positive. No, people are positive. Okay.
It's mixed.
Yes. Recent, I don't know how that works. Recent reviews are mixed, but overall they're very positive. So I don't know what this game did to wrong them in recently. But no, VR games frequently look a little bit janky. They don't display well. They're meant to display when you're in them. Like, and I don't know. We've seen lots of games like Gord is amazing, but that game looks stupid as hell if you're just watching it on a screen.
Right.
Like and it's like, that's kind of the idea. Again, that jank works in favor of, really just whooping some skeleton ass in a cave or whatever.
I don't know. It looks graphically, it's not the most impressive VR experience we've seen. I'm not expecting that out of this type of game. I'm seeing in the this clip that it looks like it's co-op. So that could be fun, just bashing it's in some
4-player co-op. Yeah,
there you go.
Oh,
bashing in some skulls with some friends in VR sounds like a good time for me.
Now I'm not even sure how you make this segue, but they were doing a new Sonic the Hedgehog game over there. Akeem, how do you?
Oh man, you know what? I gotta tell you, Sonic.
Bad games, Akeem loves. No, I'm not gonna do it.
Whoa, hold on here. It's too late. It's too, Brian. You just did it. Look, you know what? Look, I did it to Legendary Tales. I'm pretty sure they have a huge fan base that's gonna come
after
me.
Speaking of Legendary Tales, what about Miles Tales per Hour?
There you go.
That work. Was that a good segue?
Yes, I loved it. You know,
I kid the Sonic franchise, by the way. I love you guys. You're good.
Sonic
looks like a shadow of his former self. Sorry, I'll stop.
No, this honestly surprised me. I know it was rumored that we'd get some Sonic Generations news, but you know, then I saw Shadow just zoom by, and I was like, "Whoa, okay, this is a bit of a surprise." Now, I feel like a lot of people out there should be familiar with the Sonic Generations story. You know, it's you know, there's this enemy that creates like these various time holes, and Sonic has to travel back in time to team up with his Sega Genesis fat self to save his friends in the space-time continuum. And actually, one of the enemies he fights
is chubby. Okay, it's you know, we don't have to go, you know, he's chibi and cute.
Is that what we call it, chibi?
It's just a different proportionate size Sonic. Doesn't need to be.
He just got a gut. That's all. It's the Genesis version.
He looks like a hedgehog.
His favorite food isn't a, you know, spinach smoothie or what. He's a chili dog boy. Come on, like, let him just leave him alone.
No, look, I'm giving it to him. I mean,
he's getting old. Okay, it's harder to
look. Whatever. Keeping it but that's him in the past, though. Keep that in mind. That was Sonic in the past. So Sonic from our generation, which is the thin Sonic, goes back in time, teaming up with his younger, I guess, younger, fatter self? Is that what you...
Look, he was like chubby in middle school. What do you want? Like, I was too. Like, sometimes people, you know, they get a growth spurt or something. I don't know. Like...
Well, this game looks great, though. I'm going to say that. I'm looking forward to this as I feel like, you know, Sega, and I feel like I say this almost every single year, but it seems as if Sega comes out with a new... They've been coming out with a new Sonic game every single year. It feels that way. I'm looking forward to this. My only question is, I get it. I love Sonic Generations. but why not, you know, remaster Sonic Unleashed? That came out in 2008 before Sonic Generations.
Stop asking for remasters. I want new stuff like this. Like, this is, yes, this is a updated version of Sonic Generations, but it's new content. I don't want to replay Sonic Unleashed.
Well, no. Okay, like, what I mean is that, you could have like a crossover, like, kind of similar to what they're doing with this, though. That's what I'm saying. Like, kind of, you know.
Apparently, like, they tried to design a hyper realistic Wolf Sonic, and all the playtesters kept throwing up because it was so scary looking. So maybe, you know, they tried. They did give it a shot. It's just, if you want to draw it, you can. You know, maybe you can make your own game where Sonic becomes a wolf and it's hyper realistic and see who throws up.
I've already drawn it. It's on my DeviantArt page.
Okay.
Sonic, that's why people kept throwing up.
Sonic Generations is one of my favorite Sonic games of all time. It's just a fantastic blending of old school and new school Sonic.
Yeah.
I love Shadow as a character. I love Sonic Adventure 2. I love that it looks like we're getting remastered versions of Final Rush and Final Chase. Like, these are going to be, this, I think this is going to be fantastic. This is exactly the kind of content I want Sega making for Sonic. Like, Sonic Frontiers was cool. Sonic Superstars was all right. This is the type of content I want out of Sonic. This is what I'm looking forward to. So, like, I'm very hyped. Like, that's the final boss from Sonic Adventure 2. Spoilers if you haven't played that, like, 20-year-old Sonic game. But, like, I love seeing that type of stuff being reused and made in a new way. Like, I'm very excited for that.
And, well, Max and Brian aren't.
I've got people chattering about you for some reason.
It looks like fun.
Like, it's definitely, as far as like Sonic reveals go, like, this one looks, it looks like fun and colorful and interesting. I know people have differing opinions on, like, you know, on 3D versus 2D Sonic, but this does more for me than the last 2D one did. Which, you know, is also fine because I don't play games on my phone, and I know people are still bitter about that one. But moving on, let's talk about Stellar Blade, which we just got a release date for. This is from, it's from a Korean studio.
Shift Up.
Yeah, and yes, it's basically post-apocalyptic Earth. We've kind of been there before. There's humans have gone off-world. I had a really hard time getting, like, they were being very straightforward about how, you know, what the game mechanics are, what the gameplay loop is, but I still had a hard time getting a read on, like, what genre is it? Because it's got, like, little bits of, like, Soulsborne in there. It's obviously got some hack and slash stuff, definitely a lot of Nier DNA, but I still, I don't know, I couldn't get a sense, like, is this a game as a service kind of thing? Is this going to be like a grindy loop thing? Is this going to be a more straightforward RPG? I don't know, but, like, what was all your reads on this?
It looks like it's going to kind of be one of those games that kind of blends a bunch of genres into one. It's going to, like, kind of borrow from everybody's homework in the class and just kind of make it into its own thing. Mm-hmm. The earliest trailers I remember for this was very kind of hack and slash, very, like, flashy, almost Devil May Cry looking action with parries and stuff. So I'm thinking that's going to be, like, the core gameplay loop still. Who knows? After this trailer, there's still a lot of unknowns about this game. I think we'll probably get some more deep dives closer to its launch in April. But I don't know. I'm kind of into this one. I think it'll be interesting. I really like the monster design. I think the monsters that they showed off in this trailer are top notch. And I'm very excited to play this and see what other creations they have in mind for us.
Yeah, I really dig a lot of the kind of over the top sci-fi ideas here. It seems like the cosmetic options are going to be just seemingly endless. The bosses and big monsters, like you said, super, super cool. Like, some really cool sort of hybrids between mechanical and organic, right? Like, just big, gross machines that also have nasty tentacles and stuff like that. I'm into that. I was less enthused by, like, the sort of mid PS3 generation sepia toned used future kind of Fallout-y backdrops. When it gets a little more brighter and neon and a little more creative, I dig that a ton. I think you just nailed it. Like, there's a whole lot of sort of tonal differences here, but also a lot of, like, hey, this is very clearly kitbashing a ton of stuff from video games you like. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that, but, like, there are things like, hey, you can get consumables and upgrade stuff. And it's like, yeah, I know, dude. It's a video game. I got that far.
It was a lot of very familiar video game mechanics and visuals. I feel like this almost looks like an Unreal 5 remake of a game that came out 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't mean that in a bad way. A lot of good games came out 15 years ago, but in terms of, like, the sensibilities, like, it's very much like, you know, it's got some, like, Bayonetta in there. It's it's hacky, it's slashy, it's got like this, it's just like a total, I mean, there's a part where she's like, you know, she's cooking a stew and it kind of feels like a video game stew. There's just, mm-hmm. it's got like, just, mm-hmm. it's kind of all over the place. It definitely looks shiny. I feel like this is going to be a really cool showcase of the PS5. And this is, I believe, PS5 console exclusive. I think it's coming to PC too, but
it comes down to combat for me. And Jada, I'm sure the exact same way. In fact, all of you, like if that clicks, then I'll dump a ton of hours into this. Cause I actually love a game that's just like, you know, this is a 7 or 8, maybe it's a little bit narratively hollow, but like if it's crunchy and fun to play and the bosses are fun and the upgrade systems and all that feedback loop feels great, then hell yeah, I'm all in on this. I love a good like third person action game, so throw it at me.
Yeah,
I'm all for these games like borrowing from like other like kit bashing, like you said, Brian. It's all comes down to the execution and how will they blend those together, and mm-hmm. that's what it comes down to for me.
Yeah.
Now shifting gears here, something that's coming up even sooner, another PS5 exclusive is Rise of the Ronin, which comes out on March 22nd. It's also the same day as Dragon's Dogma 2, which they got trailers back to back. I'm surprised they didn't just start punching each other in the face. That's a good feud there. I also love that one of these needs to get out of the way. These are also like both clearly massive games, and they're also both clearly games that would appeal to fans of FromSoft games. Like Dragon's mm-hmm. Dogma has a lot of Dark Souls DNA, and Rise of the Ronin clearly has some Sekiro. So it's kind of hilarious that you've got to make this choice of how you're going to spend your time, but.
I'm hard pressed to think of the last time I watched like a major showcase from any of the three big companies that had two sort of thematically similar games in it, like Max said, that appeal to the same audiences that have the same release date. Like it seems like even when you were putting together this showcase, you would be like, huh, doesn't make a ton of sense to me. Like spread those out a little bit. It can only benefit both of those products if they're a month or apart. Just do it.
Yeah, I mean, which one are you? I want to go around. Which one is grabbing you the most, Jada?
I'm like split right down the middle because both of them are like 8 out of 10s for me right now. Mm-hmm. Excitement level, like I guess probably Dragon's Dogma, but that's purely based on we've seen a lot more of it because we did the IGN first all month for it. So I'm more familiar with it, but I don't know. Rise of the Ronin might get my impulse buy because it seems like it may be the less popular one. And I like to have that experience and knowledge that other people may not have.
Akeem?
Yeah, no, I'll have to say Dragon's Dogma too. I mean, honestly, just because again, we've seen more kind of like, you know, echoing what Jada said, this is my first time really getting like an in-depth look at Rise of the Ronin. So, I mean, it looks just as good. I mean, it, honestly, for me, it just comes down to how many hours in a week or a month I have to bounce back and forth between these two games.
Mm-hmm. Brian, what about you?
I didn't really get super into the first Dragon's Dogma, despite trying several times. It just didn't click, and I want to give it one more shot before this game launches. So I'm going to go with Rise of the Ronin for now, not only to be different than the rest of you, because that's fun, but because it just looks like something that doesn't come with that sort of same level of baggage for me. Like it's a new franchise. It's a new concept. It's rooted in familiarity, of course, but mm-hmm. This world looks cool. And I feel like I've done the high fantasy thing a million times. And so let's do another genre that I've done a million times.
I typically don't really gravitate towards samurai stuff. Like for whatever reason doesn't grab me, or it has to try harder to grab me, but the world here is impressive.
Yeah.
I feel like this also is probably going to be a pretty good, you know, holdover for people hoping for a new Ghost of Tsushima, which I know we're always hoping for, but like jumping off of a glider onto a horse, that's cool. I'll do that. That looks like mm-hmm. fun. It's also weird because like Dragon's Dogma is an established IP. Like it's a sort of a known quantity, but the last one came out, what, 10 years ago, 10 plus years ago. Meanwhile, this is from Team Ninja, who have been kind of steadily like putting out what they put out. Wolong, that was them, right? Mm. And then, yes. And then there was Neo. I almost said Nier. It's actually, if you talk to Australians about Neo and Nier, it's completely confusing. But no, they've, you know, put out two Neo games, which people loved and have like really crunchy combat. And it's like Team Ninja is known for making, you know, great punishing games that'll kick your ass. I'm excited about just the sort of exploration side of this. It looks, you know, enticing.
I forgot this was Team Ninja for some strange reason. I'm changing my vote. I'm going Rise of the Ronin because I love what everything that Team Ninja has basically done. Mm-hmm. You know, Ninja Gaiden, like you said, Wo Long was one of my favorites last year. They did Stranger of Paradise, Final Fantasy Origin.
That's right,
the year prior to that, which I really liked. So like Team Ninja has been hitting for me recently. So I'm swapping. I think that's what I'm going to be going with day one.
I think that might be the right answer. Like now that I think, like, I'm really excited for Dragon's Dogma, but it also feels like the first one came out and it was like, it didn't quite, people loved it. It was really cool. And it wasn't until Dark Arisen where they kind of went and retooled a few things that it really sort of stuck the landing. And even then it was a one-off. Like it came out and then we didn't hear about Dragon's Dogma 2 for like a decade. And then now we're getting it and I'm excited for it. I'm definitely more interested in that, but it feels like it could be harder to predict which way that one's going to go. And it's funny that we have to even have this conversation of picking one over the other, but they come out the same day, which is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, so did Oppenheimer in that Barbie movie.
Sure. Yeah, but those didn't take 40 hours plus to beat,
yes,
you know?
Fair exactly. Enough.
I mean, Oppenheimer was close, but like, you know, that was... Now let's move on. Even sooner, there's Helldivers 2, which is coming out super soon. And is this getting any of your attention? Like, is this?
I'm very excited for Helldivers 2. Like, this show for me like started off on such a good note, and then it kind of like just declined for me as it went through. Just because I was most interested in the upfront stuff they showed: the Helldivers 2, the Stellar Blade, Sonic Shadow Generations, Foam Stars. Like those were like, I was like, oh, this is a really good showcase. And then they jumped into Silent Hill Kojima stuff, which just isn't my bag, which is fine. But like Helldivers 2, I'm very excited for this. I love me some good co-op shooters. I really liked the first one, which was like top-down isometric. So they're, you know, it's a very different experience this time around, but I think for the better. I think this is, you know, I would have loved to see a sequel to Helldivers between the first one and now, that was more of the isometric top-down, so I could have played a little bit more of that. But if this is what they spend all their time cooking up, I'm happy with this. So I'm intrigued, and I just I hope that there's enough people playing at launch to fill the servers for people, because I think that's going to really make or break this type of game. Same with Foam Stars. It's going to really make or break how many people download and are playing it online.
Mm-hmm. It's also really cool that this is almost here, right? Like this is a game with a release date that's coming soon. It's fully self-aware about how hard into the Starship Troopers it's going. It's goofy and silly, but also gorgeous and violent. And, you know, that pushes a lot of buttons for me. So I don't know. Like I'm not really a big online multiplayer co-op, let's squad up type of dude. But like, if we get the chance to all play together, like that will completely change my mind. And this is the exact kind of game I want to do that in, right? I'm not really interested in being the big shark in Suicide Squad as much as I am being just one of these generic cloaked heroes that blows up bugs.
Yeah, I mean, and it's kind of fun to be like a grunt like that. It's also, I don't know, we're comparing it to Suicide Squad because that came out today or 20 minutes ago or whatever it was. But those are like four known characters, and I feel like there's always that playground logic of like, ooh, I want to be that one. I want to be that one. And you have to pick. But these aren't established characters. This is like a level of role playing to it that I feel like is much more, you know, which color spaceman do you want to be on an arcade game? Which again, this is such a massive leap forward compared to the first one. Like it might as well be a new IP. Like it's a, they added quite a few more A's onto the AA or AAA or whatever level this is. But yeah, I hope it's cool. Yeah.
Which is cool. If you think about it, like if you're under the age of 25, like this is, it's very rare nowadays to get a game that goes from the first game to the second game and dramatically shifts in genre and camera angle and all that. Like it used to be very common back in the day. You got a 16-bit action platformer that then became a 3D collectathon or whatever.
Yeah, Duke Nukem, Fallout, both of those did that. They did a leap from the, you know.
Mm-hmm. So this is really cool. Yeah, that's a big jump from game to game, and I dig that.
Yeah, I'm also looking forward to having one of you reload my rocket launcher for me, because apparently it's a two-man job in this game.
You just want us to be caddies?
I'm going
to
step on you with my mech coming soon after launch.
Okay, that honestly is like, I don't know how I feel about that, because that's telling me that the game does have mechs, but not yet, which makes me not excited. It makes me angry. I'm just, why don't we have mechs?
I sent you a picture last year of me at the John Wayne airport, and they were like, hey, coming soon, like a Mexican restaurant. And I'm like, I'm at the airport now. Like, I'm hungry. Where is it? I don't need a coming soon sign at an airport. Like, I'm already here. So, like, with Helldivers, like, thanks for the tease on the mechs, but like, just put them out. Give me the mech now.
Yeah. No, that's, I don't, yeah, I'm cross with them already. Helldivers, you're in a world
how
of
dare
hell
you?
From, just don't tell
you're
me
on the list now. You're off soon. The list.
Anyway, we're, you know, winding down here, but I wanted to kind of go around real quick and sort of pick out our favorite parts. What was the bell of the ball? What was the best part of this state of play that I feel like I went in just not really super excited for this one and came away in a good mood about it, you know, like a good healthy level of hype there. Mm-hmm. But I don't know about any of you. Jada, what do you feel about it? What was your vibe on this whole thing? And also, what was your favorite part?
Like I said, it started off really strong with Helldivers and Foam Stars, Stellar Blade, Rise of Ronin, and Dragon's Dogma 2. It was a fine showcase. It was good. It gave us a lot of good looks at some things that we're expecting this year, things we're not expecting this year. And then, you know, it may be cheating, but my favorite thing is the fact that we're getting a Final Fantasy state of play next week at the very end. I'm just a huge Final Fantasy person. I can't wait for Rebirth. Like, that's my big one. That's like my big game of 2024. I cannot wait to play that. So that's kind of was my favorite thing, is that news that I'm getting more of that. But from the game shown, I'd have to give it up to Helldivers too.
No kidding. Okay, well, I have great news for you, because the things you're excited for are coming out in like 15 minutes.
I know, right?
You get one next week and then one also next week. So that's kind of ridiculous. But Akeem, what was your favorite part?
I have to say it's Silent Hill 2. I'm sorry, the reason I'm laughing, because I was reading our notes and it says dude protagonist. I just thought that was funny for Silent Hill 2. But I'm excited for Silent Hill 2 whenever we get it. Obviously, we didn't get like a release date for it. But the fact that, you know, they're working on it, you know, and they showed some, they had it, they're working on it. They're far along enough where they could show us some gameplay, was good enough for me. And of course, Sonic, whenever I see Sonic in a state of play, it's a happy day for May. Me, I'm sorry.
You got this was kind of an Akeem show. You got Silent Hill and Sonic the Hedgehog, the two sides of your personality, apparently.
Yeah, and Kojima, baby. Yeah, yeah. He's been in this, like, what, 2 years from now, he will be celebrating his 40th anniversary in the game industry, which is just amazing. I mean, like, I don't know too many people that just single-handedly gave us banger after banger when it comes to video games. So shout out to him. I guess 2 years from now.
And his vest. He got a huge vest, which is,
yeah. You know. It's cold in them studios.
You know why
me?
It was cold in them studios? Because they left the door open so the drone could fly out. That's why it was cold.
Yeah, exactly.
In the studio. Brian, what was the highlight for you?
I was going to say Silent Hill 2, because I'm a big survival horror fan, but I'll give that one to Akeem. Rise of the Ronin, like, in terms of just like a big kind of meaty action platformer that has like the Sekiro rooftop traversal meets the, you know, hang glider from Tears of the Kingdom. I'm into all that. Combat looks great. World looks huge. The RPG elements are really nice. Knowing it's Team Ninja and that they've made a bunch of games that just feel awesome. Gets me really excited. And, you know, I don't know when I'll be playing this game, but I'm into it and I will wait for it. And also, it's a good holdover because we still don't know a bunch of games coming from a bunch of first party Sony studios. And, you know, they jingled the keys at the end there for you Final Fantasy people, but I want a Ghost of Tsushima game. And I haven't gotten that yet in a while, since 2020. And I'm selfish and spoiled, and I want more. So until then, I'll take Rise of the Ronin.
You can do plenty of samurai stuff. That's on March 22nd. And if you get sick of that, you can go listen to a bunch of weird dudes shout stuff like "Master Harpies and human bones that move on their own, and all roads lead to Grand Seren." And I hope those pawns keep shouting stupid, stupid stuff in Dragon's Dogma 2. You know, the highlight for me was definitely the Kojima stuff. Just the big ball of Kojima stuff. Really all of it. The Death Stranding 2 looks completely just what? Like, what? Like, what is it? It looks like it's all over the place. It looks completely bonkers. The fact that he's working on some crazy new movie. I looked it up. Fizzent isn't like a play on like physically isn't. It's short for like, I think, physical intelligence or like psych. I don't know. It's some... I said I wouldn't do this. I said I wouldn't do this. I did this with Death Stranding. I'm Googling weird words. I'm like scrubbing through the trailer. I'm gonna find things. I'm guess I'm relieved that Fizzent doesn't have, or it physically doesn't have any more to go on, because I'd be picking it apart and trying to find weird. Maybe there's a QR code hidden in there somewhere. But it's fun to speculate. I like
the Kojima's making stuff. Get back in that subreddit and talk to those guys and their theories.
You know what they say, Max? Never be game over. That's what they say, because it was written on the back of Liquid Snake's t-shirt or whatever.
Also, we got to give an honorable mention to Until Dawn as well.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I just wanted to toss that out there. I know like a few weeks ago it was announced that, you know, they found some directors for the movie. So it was nice to see that they're working on, I guess it's a remake, right?
It's a rebuild from the ground up. Rebuilt, whatever. It looks pretty, and it's coming to PS5 and PC. So that's awesome. Anyway, we are about done here. There's plenty more to talk about. We'll definitely be doing that in the coming weeks. And as we get closer to these games coming out, and some of them, you know, getting to see more of them, you can catch us every week. If you're not a regular listener or viewer, we have new episodes on Wednesday on IGN and on various podcast platforms. Before we go, I want to give a quick shout out for anybody who would like to actually get a new game right now. You can get a game called Hellcard, which is a roguelike deck builder. You can get it by signing up for IGN Plus, which is a low monthly fee to get ad-free IGN reading, a bunch of cool map stuff, tons of bonuses. You get entered a contest. There's a bunch of cool stuff. So go check that out. And if you want to buy some games and support a good cause, check out Humble Bundle. They got tons of cool bundles going on all the time. Just humblebundle.com. And on that note, beyond.
Beyond.
Beyond. Beyond.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.